Hello.
Hi, Joanne. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Thank you for making some time to talk with me today.
Of course. Happy to.
How have you been?
I've been good. God, it feels like so much has happened in the past, 8 months or so. But we've been out in Long Island, in Bridgehampton, so, displaced from the city, away from my studio, but everyone is healthy and good, so I have nothing to complain about.
I'm glad to hear that.
And how about you?
It has been an interesting time, but it calls on our ability to be resilient, I guess.
And adaptable.
Exactly. As difficult as it's been, I expect that we've all gained some wisdom and reevaluated our priorities and purpose in life and all sorts of things. So hopefully good outcomes ultimately will result. You just had a solo show in New York.
I did. Well, in East Hampton. I just had a show at Halsey McKay Gallery, which is out in East Hampton. It's
one
of the galleries I work with. And it just closed last week. And I was in a group show at Half Gallery this summer, and then I have work in a show at the Tang Museum at Skidmore College. Yeah, that is part of a survey of 100 female artists. I'm spacing the name right now, but I can send you information.
I can look it up.
Yeah.
So
I haven't been able to
check
out that one yet. Yeah. And I have a video piece actually in a group show at September Gallery, which is upstate, or around Hudson, New York.
And video is something new for you, isn't it?
You know, it's something I've done concurrent with my other, I don't really feel tied to any specific medium. I kind of feel like I like the idea of just keeping things open and working in between mediums. I am very influenced by photography and my own education in photography and the philosophy of photography, and it's kind of a grounding point, I think, for all of my work. But I have worked with video since I was in college, that's where I started working with it, and in grad school, and once in a while from that time, I've made a few videos.
I guess I only recently became aware of that.
Yeah, because there aren't that many.
I see.
And they're not, aside from being in a gallery setting, I guess I haven't really shown them, widely or anything like that. So, because to
not
me,
yet.
They kind of function like moving photographs in a way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I want to begin really by talking about the show that you just had at Halsey.
Uh-huh.
Because I know that you purposefully presented smaller scale work for you with the idea of changing the engagement of the viewer. Do you want to talk to me about that a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, it was just coming from a very kind of honest and simple place. I wanted to provide more intimacy, I guess, between the viewer and the piece. I wanted them to come in closer. I was thinking about Joseph Cornell's boxes and how they really require you to come up close and investigate, and I feel like that sort of interaction is something that, having planned that before, COVID, I felt like because of COVID, it was also very charged because we are told to stay 6 feet apart, and so just having that sort of an intimate encounter with something like that, I thought was meaningful.
Well, I was very interested in it because I personally am interested in slow, careful looking.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe because I'm so focused on paper, which requires a certain intimacy to begin with. But it caught my eye, caught my attention that you were trying to zero in on this notion with this latest body of work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think seeing the work, I think it called for a different kind of engagement. It had its complexities and each box, and I think probably required slow looking.
Yes, and in the making also, I mean, when things are that small, like there is, I think, a sense that the works are handled and touched and like, and you can relate them to the human body in a way, and kind of like in being like held or coddled. And it's kind of the way that I approach making the work. Like they're all unique pieces made from things that are touched and assembled. And, you know, there's a lot of like play, kind of placing things down, moving them over, that doesn't work, let me find something else that works, kind of assembly. And I thought that it worked to have the pieces on such an intimate scale.
For sure. And I know that I've also read that you're very interested in visual play. And you just used that word, and again, that's something that interests me very much, is the idea of play in the studio.
Yeah, well, I think that's kind of like what interests me about drawing in a way, too, is that it's, I kind of equate it to maybe an out loud or a visual sort of thinking, like, you know, you're trying things, maybe it doesn't work. It could be erased or moved or redrawn, reassembled until it works the right way, or in my case, a lot of times what I'm looking for is like the one shape, you know, carries over into the body, or the body turns into a sculptural reference or form, that there's an interplay between like the materials and a language developing.
Well, I think what's interesting is how you consider play, because mm-hmm. play doesn't necessarily mean frivolous without purpose. I see play maybe being more synonymous with experimentation.
Absolutely.
But I think mm-hmm. In some of your works where you're using the body in shapes and nylon, there's mm-hmm. a real evidence of play mm-hmm. in that work. And yet the outcome, are you playing with something? Because I'm getting sounds.
my notebook, sorry.
this recording device is really sensitive.
Uh-huh.
So it'll pick up every little nuance. So okay. I was hearing some background noise. I'm sorry.
No
but
worries.
Through your use of play, when you are making these assemblages, the outcome is so sophisticated. The outcome is so extraordinary, coming from a base of experimentation.
Yeah, thank you.
No, I feel that very strongly. I mean, I find it really amazing. In fact, I want to go back to when I first visited your studio, and I'm not going to remember exactly when that was, but it was around the time you were doing the walnut oil drawing.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember how long ago that might have been?
That must have been about maybe 5 years ago, going on 5 years.
Okay.
Between 4 and 5 years.
Okay, because I remember the first one I had seen was, I think, shown in Miami, and then mm-hmm. I went to your studio to see more. But I was thinking, in thinking about talking with you today, I remember distinctly that visit, and we focused a lot on your early photograms.
Okay.
That makes sense. Those very basic shapes, there were many iterations, and we looked at a lot of them. And then I transported myself to this moment in time in the work that you're creating. And then I went back and researched some of your early photograms. And what I saw was pretty amazing to me, because it seems as though that body of work is more pertinent today than it was when you made them.
In what way?
Because I think they have been become the anchor for your work.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
And when I went back and looked through some of those forms, I actually could see references to some of the layering and shapes and forms that you're readily using today.
Absolutely.
And I thought that was so fortifying. It's as though I find going back and looking backwards enables me to find the seeds of an artist's practice or the threads of artistry. And I was really taken by looking back at those photographs. Do you ever do that?
Well, one thing I remember distinctly from our visit was that I showed you something that I had made in undergrad, and we were thinking about, do you remember that?
It was a
collage.
It was a small piece, right.
Yeah, a small, like, little kind of, I guess I would even call it maybe just like a sketch or something.
I remember I wanted it.
whenever I look at it now, I always think about you when it is in my studio as sort of like an anchor reminder, or just a reminder of that the process kind of comes around circularly at times, or maybe it's always there, and then, you know, kind of discovering the thread of what ties everything together is kind of, I think, what makes an artist able to go forward in a way that makes sense with the practice, and a true, you know, to yourself and true to your artistry. I think I've forgotten your initial question.
I was asking you if you ever go back to look at the earlier work that you produced and see it
in
the context of the moment, and what do you discover?
I think probably not in the way that you're saying, because sometimes I feel like often when I'm finished with a body of work or something, I'm on to the next, and I don't want to spend too much time looking back. However, I will say that my own practice does inform the new works. I get ideas from while I'm working on something for the new work. So the photograms, as you were saying, they really are. It's a very astute assessment about them sort of anchoring the practice, because they really were the opening into everything that I'm doing now, all of the work with nylon, which led to some other photographic works, which led to, you know, collage works, which, you know, sculptural works. When they're at all in my organizing process, it's all self-referential.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say yes and no, but because of what you're saying, I think that I will go back and actually spend some time and look through my trajectory of work and to
It's a really good exercise. I mean, I was blown away, because I remember the photograms in a certain context, and then mm-hmm. to go back and look at them, having seen what you've produced subsequent to our meeting then, and a couple of the photograms in particular, I thought, juxtaposed with a couple of recent works you've done, would be really dynamic to consider.
Yeah.
You also think of your photograms as drawing. Would you talk to me about that?
Yeah, they are, they're done. So a photogram is exposing light-sensitive paper in the way that I use it, using exposing light-sensitive paper, photographic paper, which is coated with an emulsion, a light-sensitive emulsion, that exposing it to light and then putting it through the chemical process of the dark room,
uh-huh.
but without using a negative to get an image. So it's the image is formed from blocking and allowing light to go through and to be absorbed on the light sensitive paper.
Mm-hmm.
Within different increments, you know, the less light is, the more white it will be, the more light, all the way to from white to black, that range. So for me, and they're done in the dark room, kind of quickly, repetitively, and I'm thinking about, you know, kind of making the image in my head and roughly translating that into my hands and covering the paper in a way that will hopefully illustrate what I see in my head. So I feel like that sort of head-to-hand transaction to me is very akin to drawing, and specifically gesture drawing. So like when you would draw something quickly, trying to capture, I guess, like the essence or like the what is embodied within this image is the way that I think about it.
So it's your hands doing the seeing.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a blind drawing with your hands doing the seeing.
It's absolutely a blind drawing, yes.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Is traditional drawing part of your practice?
During COVID, I was like just doing some kind of still life drawing because I never really thought that I was that good at it, even though I enjoyed it. But it turns out I'm actually not bad at it. But I think like when I was in school, in undergrad, painting and drawing was kind of seen as like the old guard. The new, more interesting things were happening in, you know, performance and video and photography. Well, photography was kind of the department that encapsulated all of the moving and time-based media. And that was kind of what I was geared towards. The work that I was looking at, a lot of the work was coming off of like second wave, you know, feminism, like thinking about like looking at artists like, you know, Cindy Sherman or Sherina Schott or Anna Mendieta or Hannah Wilke and were artists who were many of them working between disciplines, but a lot of the work was documented in video or in photography or, you know, they were performative. And so I was really more taken by that sort of work. And I think that I just didn't develop my drawing chops as much. Now I wish, like, there's nothing to me that would be more satisfying than if I could just have a piece of, like, blank paper and be able to make something on it. But I feel like I come about drawing in a sort of backwards way. I make drawings with photograms or, you know, I'm assembling things together on a page, which is, using photographs and things and objects. But to me, it's also still a form of like assembling, drawing, putting things together onto a page. So I feel like I would like to at some point, you know, have more confidence in my actual, just even the ink drawings that you saw. They were drawings, but they're mediated in a way. Like they're not representational.
Explain that to me.
They are, I'm taking, you know, I have a criteria of the materials. I had the ink that was photo printer ink. I had the oil, and I had the procedure, the way, and I had my body movement was going to be the thing that was going to distribute the ink and the oil. And it was recording and performance in a way. So I had all of these other criteria that allowed me to, gave me the freedom to be able to put ink on a page in a way that felt like it was part of my practice, but wasn't a traditional, you know, drawing.
Well, first of all, they're really large scale,
mm-hmm.
you know, relative to some of your other work, I would say,
exactly.
at least the ones that I've seen. And they're very physical,
mm-hmm.
but they're really strong drawings.
Thank you.
In a sense of there's a freedom in them, in the flow of the drawings, but they obviously come from more the body,
mm-hmm.
less the hand.
Exactly.
I guess, and I think they're wonderful. But you haven't continued those, have you?
You know, I have not so much. I've done a few, and I felt like I wasn't in the right. Sometimes, like, things just happen within a certain, I know it sounds weird, but within a certain time, because I've tried to make more over the past, like, few years, and I felt like I haven't, like, I wasn't getting it. Like, something wasn't right. So,
Well, that's part of the playing, the experimentation. It works and it doesn't work, but you keep coming back.
Yeah, you keep coming back. But something about, I was kind of convinced it was my new studio. Like, maybe it was, like, the way that the, I don't know, like, like the floor was or something. Like, I was kind of like, I'm like, these are not happening. Whereas before, I felt like they were there was, you know, a fluidity and that they were happening, you know, quite regularly. So I think I just needed to take a break from that for a while. But it's actually interesting. It's something I've been wanting to revisit because it's something I can do out here away from my studio because I can just find a space. I don't need much to be able to do that.
And you'll revisit it in a different frame of mind because of what you've come to produce since you last did those.
Exactly.
So
who
knows what it will yield, you know?
Yeah. About 3 years ago, I was in, and if you look on the website, they might have it still on Halsey. The first show I did at Halsey McKay, I included some drawings, which were actual blind drawings. And again, like they were inspired by my, you know, the photograms and that process of blind drawing. But I made drawings with my eyes closed, but and using my left hand, using a white like wax crayon.
Mm-hmm.
And then I...
On what kind of surface are you working?
On paper, on like a arches
okay.
paper, drawing
some,
paper.
Uh-huh.
And then I put a wash over it. And the wash was made of, you know, I would use like my coffee and like some ink and, you know, and then the image would be revealed. It was, you know, the drawing with the white oil crayon. Those I really enjoyed making, and I thought that they were really interesting, and they were, you know, abstract but figurative forms. I could send you some if you'd like.
Yeah, I would love to see them.
Yeah, I'd love to.
For sure. Well, it seems that drawing is, from my eye, drawing is essential for you.
Mm-hmm.
You just come at it through different materiality.
Exactly.
And more through through the body informing or the mind informing the hand or the eye informing the hand. And so, I mean, now I see you drawing with string and you, of course, I do have one with the string as a drawing element, but it seems that that is becoming, at least in this last body of work, a more dominant element.
Yeah, again, it's one of those things that's been around, you know, in my practice for a few years, but definitely it's you know, one of the things in my toolbox that I come back to and I feel like it's a very, it's very meaningful for me. I mean, the string is just being like something that it's for myself imbued with a lot of memory of like my mother and my childhood, and you know, a calming sort of meditative process. And it's also tentative, which is also for me something that, like as I told you, like I'm not so confident in my drawing skills, but to be able to make a line, and if it doesn't work, to be able to rearrange it is also, you know, that it's forgiving is important to me.
You mentioned memory and childhood. When did art enter your life?
I always remember, well, my family immigrated to the U.S. when I was about two. My parents are in the sciences. My mother is a pharmacologist. And they, you know, I always have memories of them going, you know, to the lab to go work. We would go visit them at the lab. I think that's how photography, I think that, that language, it seemed like familiar to me to go to, like, work at the, you know, to go work at the lab in photography. But when I was young, I always remember gravitating towards art, doing, you know, really well in my art classes at school. My mom actually would nurture this in some way. I remember she had hired, or there was a woman like in our neighborhood who was giving me drawing lessons outside of school, and it was always something that I felt like I'd built because I was doing it a lot and that and I was good at it that I felt I had confidence in, even though I was not confident in many other things, so it was always also very comforting.
And you have found that space in your studio and in the dark room now, that same feeling, I suspect.
Yeah, absolutely. It's you know, I think coming to New York and actually having a studio space. I mean, I'm always reminded of, you know, Virginia Woolf's The Room of Her Own. But that was really like something that changed my practice because, you know, being in photography, it's not so necessary to have an actual space studio. Things, you know, can be taken from, you know, photographs can be taken out in the world and, you know, you can send them to the lab to be processed or you're digital and you just need a laptop and such, but that wasn't the way that I wanted to work and that I saw myself working. So actually having the studio space in New York and having, you know, a footing, a grounding in an actual physical space was hugely impactful for me. And I started making work, you know, a lot of my work has to do with, like, with the studio and showing the studio and it being, you know, self-referential and viewing myself within the space, grounding myself, giving myself a location, locating myself.
I'm interested in this idea of seduction,
mm-hmm.
which is coming from the studio. Studio, I think, allows you that space,
mm-hmm.
Especially with this more recent body of work where you have these minimalist shapes with hints of body shapes appearing on the edges. Can you talk to me about that?
Well, I think that also this is another thing about the size, too. I feel like hard that word seduction. I'm not really sure. I know I've used it, and I'm not really sure now in what way I want to.
Well, when I read about this interest in seduction, it was visual seduction.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you, when I saw your piece that was in an exhibition for my collection in Minneapolis recently, Introvert.
Mm-hmm.
It is incredibly seductive,
mm-hmm.
and not necessarily seductive in the way that we want to frame the word seductive, but
mm-hmm.
The intrigue that, I mean, it's so compelling.
Yeah.
And I think you're creating that also with some of your other multimedia shadow boxes.
Yeah, I mean,
the clay is seductive.
Right. I think it's also, too, about just giving little bits of information and allowing the viewer to make the rest. I mean, whenever we see, like, we're used to seeing female form in art. We are used to seeing
you know, curves of like a female body. And then, but we're not used to seeing, you know, maybe a space where the viewer is meant to finish that form or allowing for a space for the viewer to get part of a story, part of a visual clue, and then something else that's more about form or about line or about materials. So, and, you know, also the story behind, like, you know, who I'm photographing and why, you know, I photographed. I mean, I'm not sure if we had this conversation last time, but my sister is the model and most all of the work that I've made pretty much since, you know, grad school. She's similar looking to me. We have a similar physical stature. There is a sort of symbiotic relationship that happens in the studio between us. Like she's always, you know, willing to be my model. She becomes a stand-in for myself, I think, in a way. So I think that people could view them as, you know, self-portraits. That's okay. But there is also a dialogue and a power structure that's happening, which does with most, you know, with usually with all like model, artist-model relationships. However, the one that I am engaged in is probably different than what is the traditional.
Well, there's more of an empathic element.
Yes.
Involved between you and a sister.
Yes. Absolutely.
So it's not a stretch to think of them almost as self-portraits.
Exactly.
Or mirroring.
Mm-hmm. And
like
then
seeing
also
yourself in the mirror. Interesting. Yeah,
absolutely. And then, you know, the materials also, like the nylon, you know, it's a seductive material, but it's also like, you know, it's a material that we put on our bodies to constrain and form, but it's also to make more even and
seduce. I mean,
seduce, yeah.
As you
I
wear
mean,
them
it's
on your legs.
Lingerie.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. No, I'm very interested in the, I mean, I think the word is apropos to what you're attempting to achieve through your artistry. Even going back to a couple of the, I'm going to go to the photograms again. There were a couple there that I found very seductive.
Mm-hmm.
When you begin to think about the work and how you put it together. So own it.
Yeah.
Sure,
I think it's
right?
interesting for me to think about perhaps what makes something seductive.
Less is more.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's it.
I mean, and you alluded to it when you were just speaking, is that, you know, the brain, when it knows something, will complete it, even in fraction, with,
mm-hmm.
you know, even with extractions from a reality. And so with what you do with the body and the shape, and looking at the work that I have with the shoulder, you know, what draws me in is I have to complete the picture.
Right.
And that draws me in. That creates intrigue. And then the other elements you move around it really forces my imagination to consider
mm-hmm.
something different, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much that can wonderful to be experienced in the unknown. And so with these beautiful pieces you did with your sister with just those white board shapes with elements of the body showing, to me, were as interesting as a centerfold might be to someone else.
Right.
Cool.
Yeah, I love those works. I love the piece you have to Introvert. It's one of my favorites.
I recently saw another one that reminded me of Introvert, and I thought it would make a great pair, and I can't remember where I saw it.
Mm-hmm.
But toward the top was, I think, a larger circular black element.
Mm-hmm.
and I wish I could remember where I saw it, but I thought they'd make a great pair. So this is all very exciting. I mean, I think you're very quiet about your work, but there's intrigue and intensity behind it that I'm very interested in. Talk to me also about the framing and the shadow box, because that's important to you too.
Yeah, I wanted the shadow box kind of came about as a necessity in the beginning, because many of the pieces come off of the back, like there's actual depth in the folding of the papers, and you know the objects. But as I had said before, too, like I was also very interested in Joseph Cornell's boxes and how they were also so much about devotion, and you saw that from this like encasing of you know these objects in a box sort of like specimen, and so I wanted to kind of like run with that, and we make all the frames in my studio. The walnut wood is something I've used before, and now in some of the new pieces, I'm actually putting walnut, like the frames are coming on the inside too. Like there's a lot of the shapes, or some of the shapes are made of, are carved of, or of wood. So it's just become like one of those things that work. Like I like how it looks with the, with the silver gelatin prints and with my palette. So it's just been kind of like one of those things that just works, and so I keep going with it.
It's sort of enshrining to me a bit, and also it's formalizing the play.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is important.
Yeah,
because I think if you took some of those same elements and structures and framed them differently, it would give a whole different essence.
It's so true, and when I was saying before that came about as necessity, the first time I had this notion to stretch the nylon over the paper was because I was actually doing a residency at the Drawing Center, which invited artists who don't use traditional drawing as their usual art form to come and do like a residency and sort of like think about their work in context of drawing and meet other artists who are doing the same thing. And it was a piece that was just pinned to the wall with, photographs, and the nylon was stretched and the wall just pinned to the wall. So when it came to do a show and I wanted to work with the same materials, I had to kind of think about how to make the work less ephemeral, I guess, like so that they could be transported and they could actually be, you know, live in someone's home. And so they were actually like kind of also just made out of necessity,
mm-hmm.
In that way, thinking mm-hmm. about like how to formalize the play, as you were saying. Just such
right.
a good, yeah, such a great assessment.
Have you done many residencies, Sherry?
I have done, I started doing residencies later, I think after I had a child, because it was then, I think one of the most impactful ones I did was 6 weeks long, and it was in Banff.
What a beautiful place.
So great. Mm-hmm. And to be able to go away from, you know, my family and like the noise of New York, and to just really focus on something, is so valuable. So I've done a few. I did the one in Banff. I did, you know, the one in the city, which was through the Drawing Center, which didn't require going away, but it was meeting, you know, every few weeks or so. And then I did one, I guess it's been 4 years now, that was at the Vermont Studio Center. And I enjoy them. I think they're very valuable. And when I do sign on to do one, like I feel like it's a very precious time. I take it very seriously. However, because of, you know, my family and just what I have going on, it's like I can't do them as often as I would like. I would love to do one every year if I could. But they've always been like a very
important place for me to, I do a lot of like growth. There's a lot of like ideas generated. There's a lot of, you know, I focus entirely on my practice and kind of become a different person in those places. Like it's nice to kind of just escape into like a real world where it's just artists working and, you know, you're not a New York artist anymore. You're not, you know, someone who's, you know, on the scene or anything like that. You're just with thinking artists, and it's just this place that I like to be. It's very familiar to me, and it's,
Well, I think it's good for graduate students to hear about the value of residencies.
Oh, yeah.
And the value of residencies even for established artists. But I think it's essential because your work is based on life experiences, or it should be.
So true.
Come from your life experiences. And so to be able to step out of your normal routine and habits and be in a new space, a new environment with other voices has to be an enriching process.
It is. It's great.
Go ahead.
I was going to say I liked the anonymity also. It affords me in a way, which is, it's nice.
It's your space, and it's a way.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. I have noticed and paid attention, and most often when an artist goes off to do a residency, within the next 2 years, you're going to see some big movement in the work.
Yeah.
And inevitably, it stems from something that happened in the residency.
So true.
I think they're of great value. I'm looking through my notes to see there was so much I wanted to ask you about. I want to go back to studio with you and the comfort you have in the studio that you speak of, and how you are able to really connect with yourself in the studio and your keen awareness of your body and how that penetrates the work.
Yeah, I think that in a lot of my work, you'll actually see in a lot of the photographs, the studio floor. There is that, I keep those markers there. Like I want people to understand that this is happening in a studio space and like in my space that is a controlled environment. Because it is a way of like, I guess, grounding myself, making a mark of me being present within this certain time and space here. I think a lot of this might be sort of residual feelings, things, anxieties that might be tied up with the fact that my family, you know, we did immigrate to the U.S. from Iran when I was, like, very young, and not feeling that I had solid underfooting when I was growing up as a tie to like a place. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So you're dealing with a hyper self-consciousness.
Exactly.
Which then translates. I mean, the good side of that is then you become hyper aware.
Yes.
I understand.
And so, yeah. And so for me, the studio is that sort of like grounding.
It's a home. It's a home. It's a place you identify with.
Exactly.
And that's comforting and nurturing, right?
Yeah.
I've read you. I've heard you speak of the dark room as a place for ritual and romance.
Yes, it is.
I love that. I really love the sense of that. Can you just talk to me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, it's, everything from, you know, the lights are off, it's dark, the smells of the chemistry, you know, it doesn't matter where you are, you know, when I do residencies, I often will have access to a dark room because the dark rooms are kind of fleeting these days. So when I, search them out, I gravitate towards the ones where I could be working in a dark room. So wherever you are, you just know that, I guess like the ritual, the way that your body moves, like it's going from one bath to the next bath, like moving the things, the feelings, the smells, are all grounding and familiar.
Like being in a kitchen.
Yeah, it is actually. Or a womb.
Yeah, right, even better, yeah.
And then there's something that's generated from this time,
mm-hmm.
From these, like, movements and actions. And then, you know, then when when you bring it out into the light, you can actually see, like, what's been made. And I'm very tied to, like, the dark room ritual, because it is a sort of grounding point. It's a home feeling. It feels like, you know, oh, if I can't do anything else, I know I can do this, like, go through this process. And it's very meditative. You're alone.
And that, and it's quiet.
It's quiet. Or, you know, I often, like, listen to music or, you know, but it's
okay.
I'm in control. It's like your room that you're in
mm-hmm.
control of.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Cool. Has there been a transformative moment for you in the development of your career?
Transformative. Oh, I'm still waiting for that. I feel there have been
good.
Little, like, transformative moments. I mean, I just had one most recently. The most recent one was I'm included in the newest version of the photograph as contemporary art, which is, I remember when the first issue, it's a book, kind of an anthology of, like, of contemporary art photography. And the first one I saw, I think the first one came out about 10 years ago, and I was just looking through it, and I'm like, God, I really want to be in this book. This is, like, this is where I want to see, you know, I belong in this book, and I want to be included amongst these other artists. And I just got the book sent to me today that the author, Charlotte Cotton, she contacted me about a year ago. She told me that that she was including me in the newest version, the fourth edition. And so I was like, that to me is very transformative, because to be canonized in a book, like an anthology like this, to me is like a very important thing, because it's placing you within, contextualizing you within other artists who, you know, I admire. So I would have to say.
Well, it's happening at a great time, Sherry. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
I mean, what's happening with what we once knew as photography is extraordinary. I'm very much keyed in. I'm very interested, and there are no limits. It's very exciting to be, I would think, for you to be among those who are sort of dominating the scene right now. So congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Do you have any particular writing that you hold dear that you go back to time and time again that informs your work?
I'll tell you what I enjoy reading, and it's not because I totally am a master and I understand it all. It's because it keeps me thinking, and it kind of keeps my brain going enough. And I feel like at times, like, I'll look over it, and then I'll glean something from it that might make sense to me for that moment. And that's, a lot of that is theory. And I think it's because, like, when I was in school, I came from a tradition of reading theory, and it's something that I go back to. So I would say people like Julia Kristeva, Clarice Lispector, Helene Cizou. I like to kind of think about, like, psychoanalytic theory and people who are writing about that. Walter Benjamin, Bowen Bart.
So it's fortifying for you too, I assume.
It's fortifying, and a lot of them write about photography specifically, and looking
mm-hmm.
and you know, pleasure in looking, pleasure
mm-hmm.
in being looked at. Those sorts of things are very generative for me.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Do you journal? Do you keep a journal In some form, I mean, journal can take many forms, but
yes, often on, I'm better at it than not. Right now, I'm doing again the artist way again. So I'm trying to do my 3 pages of just, you know, getting out the stuff in the morning. I'm sure you must be familiar with the artist way. I feel like, do you know this book?
I don't.
Oh,
The Artist Way.
The Artist Way, yeah, and it's by a woman. It's 25 years old, I think, at least. It's sort of a process of, like, to get rid of, like, artist block. But she has 2 things that you have to do you have to do these things. You have to journal. She calls them morning pages, 3 days every day. The first, just get it out. Whatever you're thinking doesn't have to make sense, nothing, just every single day, 3 days, 3 pages. So I've been doing that recently, and I feel like it's a very good way. It's a good method to sort of like just clean out, like take out the trash out of your head.
Not always trash, exactly,
but just to get it out, like, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Then,
aren't you surprised with what you've discovered? You didn't even know it was there?
Yeah, totally. And then I always keep like a notebook, like a kind of like a sketchbook that I has everything from like notes for my reading to like some little doodles to, you know, just things that I want to remember to look at, or if I see an artist I like to write down. So I always keep pages of things that I write down.
And is that in any kind of uniform fashion that you do this? Is it a certain kind of folder or book that you use, or scraps of paper? How does that happen?
So for the morning pages, I just use a plain wired notebook that, and then for my sort of like my sketchbook, I like to buy one of those hardcover, black traditional kind of sketchbooks that I keep around.
And do you save them?
Yes. I never throw them out.
Okay. You've got them organized somewhere in your studio.
They're around.
Well, I have a theory, and I often put this forth to graduate students, that I believe that an artist, to reach their greater potential, has to put pen to paper in some fashion, be it doodling, journaling, drawing, I don't care what it is. But that has to be a part of their practice if they're going to achieve their greater potential.
It's a great exercise. Even just the practice of just making a mark on a page is so, I mean, it's. I think a white sheet of paper, a piece of drawing paper, is like kind of terrifying. But if you are used to sort of attacking it in a way and kind of marking it in a way, then it becomes less and less terrifying. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like what I'm trying to go for.
Get a comfort, feel comfortable.
Yeah.
So I promised you 45 minutes. We're probably way beyond that. I have one more question to ask you.
Yeah.
And that is, what impact, becoming a mother, what impact has that had on your work?
Well, the biggest impact, I think, is kind of a practical one, honestly. It's, like, made me much more focused, made me have to make my schedule and my time much more focused and precise. And I definitely know that I started making the photograms because I was pregnant. I had to make some work. I needed to, like, go, and I wanted to have something to show for, like, my work because I didn't have that much time. And so when I think about it, it makes me more deliberate in my decision making. And if you think about what is art making, basically much of it is just decision making. You know, what am I going to use? What is it, you know, going to look like? What color? What form? How big? So kind of like having more weight in my decision-making power, and I think trusting my own kind of skill and judgment more, grounding me.
And probably made you more aware of you.
Yes,
personally.
That's a good point.
because you're being reflected through this other little human being.
Yeah,
and,
it's true.
Gives you more present, I guess. Interesting. Well, I could talk to you on and on, but I think I should let you go. I'm so grateful for this time, and what I'll do is transcribe this conversation, and we'll extract some quotes from it to add to your page on this section of my website for conversations, and it'll also feature I'll select one image of one of your works to be on that page, and then the full audio is available. So we see this as a really great asset for graduate students and curators studying the collection. And I think the benefit, I mean, I've been doing this because I'm not doing studio visits, and I miss that, and I miss those connections, but I'm actually finding great value because talking without seeing the work, talking without being in the studio, forces us to articulate a little more clearly what the dynamic.
I appreciate that, your time and your questions.
I'm getting a lot out
so
of it.
Great.
Well,
thank
thanks.
You.
Likewise. Well, thank you, and I hope you have a great fall, and I'll continue watching your work develop with interest. I stay connected, and I'm so pleased to have your voice in the collection.
Thank you, and I look forward to seeing you in person sometime soon, I hope.
I hope so, too. You be well, Sherry. Thank you.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.